Still sitting in the dust, Gary shook himself like a great St. Bernard dog. "Come on, Mr. Bloody Chairman of the Board," Sean taunted him. "Get on your feet, Mr. Businessman of the Sodding Year. Let's see your style, Mr. Fortune Magazine 500." "Leave them, Bella," Sharza still held her. "This had to come. It's been brewing for 20 years. Let them work it out." Suddenly Isabella understood. Sean's choice of jibes was an expression of the envy and resentment that he had accumulated over a lifetime. Sean was the firstborn, the golden princeling, the pick of the litter. All those honours and titles should have been his. He should have been the prime recipient of his father's favour and approbation, and yet he had lost it all. It had been stolen away from him by the runt. "Pissbed," said Sean. "Four eyes." Those were childhood insults. Isabella had a vivid memory of the lordly superiority of the elder brother. She remembered how in the Cape winters of their childhood, when the snow lay thick on the Hottentots' Holland Mountains, Sean would turn Gary out of bed in the dawn and send him to sit on the toilet to warm the seat for him. She remembered 100 other episodes of humiliation and casual bullying by which Sean had reinforced his domination over the weakling. Gary came to his feet. He had applied 20 years of unremitting labour to building up the sickly body that he had been born with. Now his chest was a barrel of muscle, and the coarse body hair curled out of the V of his shirt front. His limbs were almost grotesquely overdeveloped. However, he stood almost 4 inches shorter than his elder brother as they confronted each other. "That," he said quietly, "is the last time. It will never happen again. Do you understand?" "No," Sean shook his head, his anger contained behind the mocking smile. "I don't understand, pissbed. You're going to have to explain it to me." The German client and his 2 nubile nurses had climbed down from the Toyota and followed Sean into the boma. Now they were watching with delighted anticipation. Gary blinked like an owl without his glasses, but his teeth clenched so hard that humps of muscle like walnuts bulged on the hinges of his jaw below his ears. Sean leant forward, balanced on the balls of his feet, and slapped his cheek lightly, still smiling mockingly, and Gary went for him. He was fast for such a heavy man, the way a bull buffalo is fast, the way an old mugger crocodile is fast. But Sean was fast as a leopard. He ducked under Gary's rush and threw a left-hander into his belly just below the sternum of the ribs. It was like throwing a brick at a battle tank. Gary did not even grunt. He merely hunched his shoulders and came in again. Sean weaved and danced ahead of him, the insolent grin still on his lips. He was letting Gary come to him, the counter-punching with the rushes. His blows thudded on rubbery muscles as though he were beating a truck tire with a baseball bat. The German nurses were squealing with happy horror. The camp servants came running from the kitchen lines, their heads bobbed up in a row along the low boma wall, wide-eyed with fascination. "Stop them, Daddy," Isabella pleaded, but Sharza was assessing his sons with a calculating eye. So far, this was the way he would have expected it to go. Sean was all flash and style, tossing back his glossy locks after each exchange, taking a moment to glance at his audience, especially the blonde nurses. Gary, on the other hand, was plugging away solidly, making Sean dance and weave to keep out of range of those massive arms. He was obviously willing to take all the body shots that Sean could throw at him. However, it was surprisingly difficult for Sean to land on Gary's head. He had a trick of hunching those muscled shoulders at the final instant and deflecting Sean's fists. He was also very quick with his arms, and some of Sean's best punches to the head were caught on Gary's heavy biceps or on his hairy forearms. At first, Gary's rushes seemed to be without purpose. Then Sharza realized that he was remorselessly driving Sean back into the corner wall of the boma, attempting to pin and grapple him there. Each time, Sean managed to break clear, and Gary would begin all over again. He was as patient as a sheepdog, working him into the position he wanted, grimly accepting the punishment Sean was inflicting. Blood from his nostril was running into his mouth and dripping from his chin into the front of his khaki bush shirt. By this time, Sean's mocking grin had become a little strained, and the flow of taunts had long since dried up. His movements were no longer so crisp. On the other hand, Gary moved with the same ponderous rhythm and momentum, pushing Sean back, back, always backwards. Sean's punches were losing their snap, and he threw them less prolifically. Then Gary blocked him as he tried to pirouette away to the right, at last anticipating his move precisely. Sean backpedaled quickly to regain poise, and felt the thatch of the wall touch his back. He ducked to go under Gary's outstretched arm, and Gary let his first punch fly. All the spectators gasped, and one of the nurses squeaked shrilly. Gary's punch was a thunderbolt, with 200 pounds of muscle and bone and determination driving it. It hissed through the air, and although Sean caught it on his guard, it drove on through. It crashed against the curved dome of his skull, high above the hairline, with a force that made his long shining hair swirl and flicker, as though a gust of wind had caught it. For an instant Sean's eyes rolled fully backwards in their sockets, giving him a blind white stare. His knees buckled and sagged under him. Then he partially recovered, but his face was frosted with pain, and his mouth was twisted with panic as he tried to avoid the next bear-like rush. Gary charged in, eagerly seizing the moment for which he had worked so doggedly. His arms were spread as though to welcome an old friend or a lover. Suddenly he kicked and spurted like a long-distance runner, hearing the bell for the final lap. He had fooled them all, including Sean. They had thought that those ponderous rushes were all the speed he had. But suddenly there was more. Much more. A buffalo bull charges in for the kill in the same fashion, crabbing across the front of his victim, lulling him, making him doubt that he is really the focus of all that mountainous aggression. Then at the last moment he turns in with bewildering speed to hook and gore and trample. Half-stunned, Sean could not avoid him. Gary's arms snapped around him in a murderous hug, and the momentum of his charge carried them both onwards into the dining tent. The bar table went over in a shower of ancient spirits, noble wines and precious crystal. They trampled the glittering splinters underfoot, and a heady cloud of fumes enveloped them for a moment before they barged onwards. The long dining table, spread with Madeira lace, crashed over. The Rosenthal dinner service burst into 10,000 expensive splinters. As they went out through the back of the tent, they ripped out the guy ropes and the canvas sagged in weary folds. The servants scattered with cries of alarm and excitement and encouragement. In a ferocious waltz, they whirled each other in erratic circles. Gary's grip was unshakable. He had double-locked his own wrists behind his brother's back, his arms convulsed, rippling with muscle, as they tightened like a python crushing its prey. One of Sean's arms was trapped in that deadly circle. With the free fist, he beat wildly at Gary's head, but he lacked purchase, and the blows had no sting. Although one caught Gary in the mouth and split his lip, it left his big white teeth intact. He merely ducked his head and slitted his eyes and squeezed and squeezed. With an approving roar from the black audience and feminine squeals from Sean's admirers, they lunged into the far side of the thatched boma wall, and it burst open. The two of them, still locked together, came storming back onto the central stage. One of the nurses was not quick enough to avoid them. She was knocked over in a tangle of long tanned legs, flaring skirts and lacy underwear that might have stopped any lesser show. Nobody even glanced at her. Gary was trying to swing Sean off his feet, lifting him high with each turn. Although Sean's face was swelling and darkening with blood from the constriction of his chest and breathing, he managed, like a cat, to come down onto his feet after each wild swing, until Gary steered him into the middle of the campfire. Sean's legs were bare, and the flames licked at them, frizzling the hair off his calves, scorching the thin kuduskin felskun. Sean let out a howl of anguish, and bounded high in his brother's arms. He managed to jump clear of the fire, but Gary's grip was inexorable. Grunting with the effort, he forced Sean slowly backwards, bending him like a longbow. Sean's scorched legs buckled, and he sank lower and lower. His knees touched the ground, and Gary bent over him and grunted again as he tightened the circle of his arms another inch. The air was forced from Sean's lungs in a long, hollow groan, and his face suffused with dark blood. Gary grunted again, and his grip tightened another notch, remorseless as a mechanical steel press. Sean's eyes began to bulge from their sockets, and his jaw fell open. His tongue lolled out between his teeth. "Gary, you're killing him!" Isabella screamed. her concern moving from one brother to the other. Her father held her, and Gary showed no sign of having heard her. He grunted yet again and squeezed. This time they heard Sean's ribs crack like green twigs. He cried out and went slack as a half-empty bag of wheat in Gary's arms. Gary dropped him and stood back, breathing heavily. His own face was flushed and swollen with the effort. Sean tried to sit up, but the pain of the cracked ribs lanced him, and he moaned again and clutched his chest. Gary smoothed back his hair with both hands, but the unruly crest at the crown of his scalp sprang up again immediately. "Right," said Gary calmly. "From now on you will behave yourself, do you hear me?" Sean managed to push himself up onto his knees with one hand, clutching his chest with the other. "Do you hear me?" Gary asked again, standing over him.
"Screw you,"
Sean whispered, and the effort hurt his chest. Gary leant over and prodded his injured chest with a thick, hard thumb.
"Do you hear me?"
"Okay, okay," Sean yelped. "I hear you."
"Good,"
Gary nodded, and turned to the hovering nurses.
"Fräulein," he said in passable German, "I think we have need of your professional services."
They rushed forward, clucking, one on each side of him. They raised Sean to his feet and led him away to his tent. Sharza released Isabella's arm.
"Well," he murmured, "that seems to have sorted that out at last."
And then he glanced at the shambles of the dining tent.
"I do hope that wasn't the last bottle of Chivas."
Gary sat on the camp bed, stripped to the waist, while Isabella anointed his bruises with arnica salve from the first aid box. The hectic blotches left by Sean's fists covered his arms and upper body, like the dappling of a giraffe's hide. His nose was swollen, and his lip was lumped and crusted with fresh scab.
"I think it's an improvement," Isabella told him. "Before your face was only half nose. Now it's all nose."
Gary chuckled and pinched the end of it gingerly.
"We've taken care of Master Sean. Now it seems as though you are next on the list to be taught a little respect."
She kissed the top of his head, where the tuft stood up from its crown.
"Teddy bear," she said.
"You know, Gary, Holly is a lucky girl. You are one hell of a man."
He blushed. He actually blushed. And her love for him was confirmed and strengthened. He was no longer comical, even with the bloated nose and thick upper lip. Sean groaned again theatrically, and Otto Heider threw back his head and laughed.
"Here!"
He poured another three fingers of whiskey into the tumbler that stood on the bedside table. "This is for the pain, like chloroform." Sean leant across to take the glass and tossed back the whiskey.
"I've been jumped on by Buffalo and kicked by Jumbo, but this one... Hey, Trudy, take it easy."
Trudy paused, with the surgical tape in her hand, and kissed him full on the lips.
"Be quiet," she said. "I am fixing you."
She had a sexy German lisp and soft red lips.
"You're a great little fixer," he admitted.
She tinkled with laughter and resumed work on his injured chest, passing the tape under his armpit to Erica, who sat behind Sean on his king-size bed.
"No more bumsen for you,"
Erica smiled severely. "Not for many long times." And passed the tape under his other armpit, back to Trudy. Otto Heider laughed again.
"Are you going to retire injured and leave me to take care of these two little vixen all on mine own?"
Otto was amazingly generous to his friends, and Sean was an old friend. Otto shared with his friends. The four of them, Otto, Trudy, Erica, and Sean, had done more than merely hunt together. It had been a fun safari. Except for the elephant that Gary had messed up, they had all enjoyed themselves immensely.
"You no good anymore, but your brother, he strong like a bull." Trudy slanted her eyes wickedly. "He fight good. You think he bumsen good?"
Sean stared at her thoughtfully for a moment, and then he began to grin.
"My brother is a prude, a prig. He was almost certainly a virgin when he married that po-faced wench of his. I doubt he would know what to do with a good piece of bumsen if you waved it under his nose."
"We show him what to do with it," Trudy promised. "Me and Erica, we show him good."
"Well, what do you think, Otto?" Sean looked across at his client. "Can I borrow the ladies tonight? It shouldn't take long. I'll have them back in your tent by midnight. Otto shook his head with admiration.
My friend, you are one funny man. You always make such good jokes. Hey, girls, you like it? What do you think? It's a funny joke, hey?
Sean was laughing with them, holding his injured ribs to cushion them. However, there was a vindictive gleam in his eyes. Sean understood better than any of them what had happened that day. It had been much more than another brotherly brawl that he had provoked. It had been the ultimate territorial contest of two young bulls in the final battle of dominance and rank. He had lost, and the defeat rankled deeply. He knew that he could never seriously challenge again. Gary had beaten him in every sphere, from the boardroom to the physical arena. Gary was at last unassailable. All Sean could do now was adulterate his power. He wanted to lay in a little insurance against the stormy days that he was sure lay ahead.